Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Well, good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Jay Marie Schaefer.
Hi, Jay Marie. Jay Marie and I are two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm, and some combination of us are here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and Medicaid planning, long-term care planning, crisis planning, powers of attorney, health care proxies, the basics, the complexities, the whole thing. We have four physical offices in Albany, Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and down in Kingston. And we really do serve, Jay Marie, all of New York State. So if you have a family member down Long Island or someone who might have 6 feet of snow on their doorstep, you never know. We're happy to help them as well. It's a call-in show, so you could be our first caller or a later caller at 518-476-5900. And if you want to call our office to set up an appointment down the road, 465-7581. Good morning, Jay Marie. How are you?
I am well. I'm glad I'm not in Buffalo this morning.
I'm telling you. If we were in Buffalo, this would be my last week in Buffalo because I would move out promptly.
It's way too early for that amount of snow.
I don't even... Where would it all go? Where does it melt? How does it melt? Right. I don't understand. John, do you have any idea?
Well, it's Buffalo, so they're used to it, I guess. And
they might be used to it, but where does the snow go?
Yeah, well, it's just it. They dump it somewhere, maybe in the lake, or maybe in the Bills Stadium.
Well, I saw photos in the Bills Stadium.
It's filled with snow, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
They have to do something with it, and they do. And I'm sure they got it figured out. But
I feel like some of that snow, like the bottom of that snow, is never going to go away.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Until spring, right?
It's unreal.
Probably there.
Well, we may have a lot of 40-degree days between now and the first of the year, so that could take away a lot of it. And it will evaporate with the sun, too. So.
Oh. Evaporation.
Evaporation,
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
So, you know, that's what I get for working with meteorologists all these years.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do for, Thanksgiving and stuff. It's certainly not going to go away before Thursday.
No, but they're so good at clearing it that I'm sure a lot of it will be taken care of. Not all of it, of course, but a lot of it will be. And they have help coming in from other cities and other states, and they'll be all right.
Jay Marie, if Harry was on the radar right now, he'd be talking about what half an inch of rain does to North Carolina, I think. Freezing
rain.
Right.
Yeah. Freezing rain. Yeah, they can't handle that down there.
Well, so what's going on, Jay Marie? Long time no see. What's up?
I'm good. Getting ready to enjoy a nice weekend here. Finishing up all yard work.
Yard work? What's that? What do you mean yard work? It's too cold outside. So you had a couple of webinars this past week, Jay Marie. I had one of them. I did wills versus trust. You did what? Aging in place and the myths?
And Medicaid and estate planning myths. That's right.
How'd those go? Well attended.
They both.
Good questions.
Yeah, the myths one is really good. Always gets questions because there's just a lot. Again, all that misinformation that's out there. I know we've spoken about it before, but every time we get new people listening who are learning new information, you know that okay, well, it has to go to probate or. Yes, the look-back period is not 7 years. and it's just sharing that information every time we do the webinar so more people know.
I feel like every webinar is a myth webinar, and every phone call, every consult, every radio program, we're talking about the myths constantly because it truly is unbelievable how many people, you know, when you say, well, there's a five-year look-back, and they say, oh, they lowered it from seven, and you say, well, it was never seven. It was five. It's still five. Might be seven one day.
That's right.
Well, one of the big myths that's, I don't think it's an official myth on your slides, but it's a myth all the time, is the idea that what irrevocable means is really tying your hands. And if you do a Medicaid trust, which is technically irrevocable, you can't do anything. and your options are limited, and obviously that's far from the truth.
That's right. In fact, I was meeting with clients yesterday who came in to talk because their mom is on community Medicaid, so she's getting services at home. We helped her get that. But they were more confused about how to help mom pay her living expenses because mm-hmm. she only has a limited amount of income. And she lives in her house. Her house is in a trust. But they had misinformation or didn't understand what they could do with a house in the trust. They thought they couldn't sell it. The property has a cottage on there. They didn't know that they could rent the cottage.
Sure.
So there's lots of things you can do with property in a trust.
The trust is not supposed to make life any different, and that seems absurd to say, right, Jamrie, that doing an irrevocable Medicaid asset protection trust doesn't change anything, but it kind of doesn't, because when it comes to that real estate you're talking about, no matter what, mom, grandma, whoever's, you know, on community Medicaid, whoever created the trust, they're still responsible for everything when it comes to that house. I mean, we have pages of language of it in the trust that says who's paying the taxes, who's paying the insurance, right? Who's paying the National Grid? It's all mom or grandma, right? And then the flip side of that, Jamrie, is, well, who's entitled to the benefits of having property? Well, that's mom or grandma or whoever it is as well. And the benefits of having property include living in it, include having the choice to sell it one day, and, of course, the benefit of getting income from that property if that property does produce income. So, to me, that's like easy peasy. Of course, she can rent out the cottage. Of course she's going to be entitled to those monies, because even if the property is owned by the trust says that she gets all beneficial interest in that property. And oh, by the way, separately, she's the income beneficiary of the trust. So she gets that money anyway.
I know. And it's funny that something that's just to you and me seems kind of obvious. It's not to our clients. So I'm glad that they came in to talk, because they were going to move mom to an apartment because they thought they couldn't afford the expenses for the house.
Right.
But once they learned or realized they could rent the cottage, you know, then they're like, oh, okay, now she can stay at home and we don't really want to move her, right? And we can use that rent to help pay the expenses.
Absolutely. And, you know, so rent is income, and there's obviously income implications, income rules when it comes to that program. But at the same time, you know, a lot of that rent goes just to pay the overhead of the properties in general. I don't even know if she's making quote-unquote net income or a lot of it, but the idea is there's more cash to pay for things to keep her there. And, you know, it's got to be that way, because in order for this to be a good long-term care plan, we need to plan for when mom needs a couple hours a week of care, and then a couple hours a day of care, and then eventually double digits a day, maybe even 24/7 eventually. It's really a wonderful program.
She was receiving 24-hour care, which is wonderful. Yeah.
So was the issue just paying the bills?
Yes. That was all it was. They also were surprisingly afraid to pay any of her bills, like to help her out.
Oh.
They thought that would jeopardize something. Which is not true. If they wanted to tip in and pay a, you know, oil bill for mom, that wouldn't hurt anything.
So, Jamrie, I assume that there's not much else in her trust then. Or does she have a trust?
She has a trust.
Okay.
Yeah, the only thing there is the house.
Because if there was money in the trust, they could always do these partial revocations to pull some money out to pay bills. But the idea is we have a cottage not doing anything, so let's make it make some money so, you know, we have more income.
Right, that's right. I mean, at first, before I knew about the cottage, we were talking about selling the house, putting her in an apartment, and then exactly what you said, doing a partial revocation to take out money if they needed that money to help pay the rent. So that was another option as well.
You know, I wonder in this economic climate if it's, from a monthly obligation standpoint, whether it's cheaper to rent or cheaper to own a house and all the trappings. I don't know. I mean, you know, we laugh about or we cry about 6 feet of snow in Buffalo, but
right.
practically speaking, if you are in the capital region and you are getting mm-hmm. home care, well, I think we still need to remove some snow at some point. You're going to have to hire somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the landscape, you know, mowing the lawn. There's just right. the routine things that a landlord may be repairing if you're renting. Instead, it's now on you to replace the hot water heater. You know, it's close, and I could totally see, and thankfully the trust is so flexible that you could sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
Let's like explore this. So if they sold the house, where's the money going to go?
So they have to open up a trust bank account to keep the money protected, mm-hmm. which is sometimes where clients make a mistake. That was another client I met with this week. This other client sold the house, put the money in their own name, and then bought a new house in their own name.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's very not good. The trust was the owner of the property. Dan was on last week with me, and we talked a lot about, you know, the closing being 90% the same, whether you have a trust or you don't have a trust.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the whole process, and, you know, there's maybe some property disclosure differences, but really the big difference is those closing proceeds. We don't want them going to people. We want them going to a trust account. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if she did it the right way and she sold the house, there'd be a pile of money in the trust instead mm-hmm. of the house.
Right.
It would continue to be protected, so she would continue to be eligible for community Medicaid. No look back, so we don't care when the property went in the trust to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then she would still be the income beneficiary of the money that she's got. So if she invested that money and got some sort of dividend, she's still getting that, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And then more importantly, if her Social Security and pension and little distribution from an IRA wasn't enough, then you're probably doing quarterly or semi-annually distributions from the trust to basically replenish her bank account so she could then pay any shortfall. I mean, I think she's good either way.
Yeah, she was good either way, so they really had choices there, whether, you know, to stay in the house or and rent a cottage or to just sell the whole thing. So that kind of just comes down to, you know, where is she going to be more comfortable? But they didn't know they had all these choices. So that was really good to go over the options with them.
Well, Jamarie, they always had the choices. So pre-trust, pre-community Medicaid, when she's just a homeowner with a cottage on the property, she could always have rented it.
Right. That's right.
So doing the trust or eventually applying for and being approved for community Medicaid doesn't change what you could do with your own property. And thank God for that. I mean, that's kind of the point of the type of trust we do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I pushed like the same button in like six different consults this week about the difference between trusts and why the Medicaid trust works and why it doesn't really change anything, even though it seems like it's a pretty darn big change. Mm-hmm. Your example is a like textbooked one as to like, you still benefit from every piece of that property, the sales proceeds, the rental proceeds, and hopefully this program for her, I don't know what she has going on, why she needs community Medicaid to start, but hopefully the house is the kind of house that she can continue to grow old in, you know, like the stairs and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, I think it's set up that way, so she could stay there if she wanted to. I mean, another option is, if she needed to move out, if she didn't have the cottage, right, she could move into an apartment and they could rent the house and get income from renting the house.
Yeah.
So still a lot of options. And we did talk about that. And that's somewhat more of a financial decision, right, whether to rent a property or sell it right now. But that's the same choice you would have as if you own the property individually versus in a trust.
You know, I think if we take a step back, some people don't even know that you have a choice to just get care at home. They don't even know about that program. It's amazing how many people don't know about that program. And thank goodness for it. You know, we have so many clients where it's not just, you know, they want to sleep in their own bed, but of course they want to sleep in their own bed. You know, you don't want to be in a nursing home or something or assisted living. But they want to tend to their garden, or they want to continue their bridge club, or they want to, you know, work on a puzzle, or that's what I want to do is work on puzzles.
Or still take care of your chickens. You know?
Take care of your chickens, yeah, Jamie Shaker.
Yeah.
or how about this? Host your grandkids and your kids for Thanksgiving. You could still do it. I mean, you may not be cooking everything, you know, with your fastball anymore, but people love having that house, and thank God for the program. And if we could shout from the mountaintops, we would. This is the closest we come to it, John.
That's right. That's right. So speaking of Thanksgiving, I know a lot of people are going to be either, right, going home or hosting.
I think a lot of people in Buffalo are going to be hosting, actually. They're not going anywhere.
You're probably right, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of food delivery.
That's right.
It's true.
Jamie, what was your family tradition growing up? What did you guys do? Whose aunt, well, you know, what aunt, what uncle's house did you go to? Was it your parents? What's the deal?
Thanksgiving was at our house. Christmas was at my aunt's house. So it always started with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on TV.
Of course. And was your mother cooking a lot? Or was it dad cooking a lot? Or what was it?
My mother, she was the cook. Dad didn't cook anything, basically. the turkey went on pretty early because we had people have Thanksgiving dinner earlier sometimes. I think now we do ours kind of more like dinner time, but growing up was more like 2 or 3, like something in the afternoon.
We're like a 3 p.m. meal.
Yeah, family. 3 or 4 for me, too.
It's like in between the football games and then you're just an
I guess it's when it's done, it's done.
When it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
And then there's the stealth turkey sandwich at night that I partake in. It's pretty good.
And turkey soup and turkey a la king, turkey croquettes.
Lots of croquettes,
yes.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Well, we Quebecians are carboholics, so we like the stuffing. Extra well done stuffing.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Little crunch to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too.
So, Jamie, has the tradition continued? Are you the host for Thanksgiving? No, you usually go away for Thanksgiving. What am I talking about?
We're not this year, but pre-COVID, we used to go away every year to the Caribbean for Thanksgiving. So we didn't have, my kids didn't grow up with a turkey and stuffing.
Really?
They grew up with,
with suntan lotion and
suntan lotion.
And giant pineapples to drink out of.
Yes, pina colada, but the virgin pina coladas, right?
Yeah.
So now that because of COVID, we've been, you know, home the past 2-3 years. So it's kind of almost fun to do like the normal turkey, you know, stuffing, mashed potatoes, all kinds of food like that.
Very cool. Well, we always say after the holidays and these family gatherings, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or even Easter, we always get an influx. John, I don't know if you know this. We get an influx of calls after holidays. It's like, believe it or not, and there's a couple different versions of them. And some of them are, you know, we want to change our documents because we no longer want to treat our kids the same or whatever.
Those family gatherings have a tendency to change things.
They do.
And tempers may flare. Everybody just keep a cool head.
And the big one that we get is actually where son or daughter calls and says, hey, did you guys say there's a home care program? We haven't seen mom and dad for a while.
Yeah.
It's been a year. Uh-huh. It's been 2 years. It's been COVID, whatever.
Right, right.
And we're noticing things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is...
I can see where that happens, sure.
Well, the next 8 or so minutes here are going to be a little public service announcement to everybody as to the things to look out for. And if you've listened to the show a bit, you'll kind of be able to say these by heart at this point. But what kind of things, Jamie, would you look for when you're visiting your folks, Thanksgiving or not?
Right. Let's start with the refrigerator, right?
I knew you would start with the refrigerator. You always start with the refrigerator.
Because you go in and you look, and is there anything moldy? Is there any smells coming out of there? Is there expired, you know, milk or whatever?
Does it look like a healthy refrigerator? Mm-hmm. Are there fruits and vegetables and stuff? Is it just a bunch of condiments? And to-go boxes.
Very good idea.
Real old.
Yeah, I used to do that with my mother. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, the old food. First of all, you want them eating, you know, non-expired food. That goes without saying.
Right.
But if they are forgetting about certain things, that may mean something. Of course, it may not mean something either. Right. It may mean that they've been busy getting their house ready to host your darn family, Jane Marie, and, you know, mind your manners and all that.
Right. Right. Well, yes, just one container of milk is probably okay. But you're kind of looking at overall, right? Does it look like they're shopping and getting their groceries every week, or does it look like they're just getting by on, you know, whatever they get by on, some old people to eat, like
oyster crackers and so on.
Right, crackers, candy.
Check it all and give it a sniff.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the telltale sign. Yeah.
And I'm no, food critic or anything, but if you know, your aunt's classic whatever, it tastes awful and is burnt and she forgot the main ingredient and things like that, of course it could be because there's a lot of commotion and stuff going on. It also could mean that, you know, we're slowing down a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's okay, too. I have one that I think is brilliant. I didn't think of it. I read it somewhere, which is if the house has stairs, looking at the walls along the stairs, because if people have a tough time with stairs, they're going to do what? They're going to touch the walls.
Put their hands on the
walls.
Yeah.
There might be some marks.
Right.
And, you know, you talk about a big game changer in the fact pattern. It's not burning, you know, a casserole. It's a fall that takes place.
Right. That's nasty stuff right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. So you want to get ahead of that. And it's, hey, are we doing all right? Are you still doing those exercises, Mom? Are you going for your daily walks? Stuff like that. I mean, we're reading, you know, tea leaves here. You could also just ask them how you doing, which is, I recommend you go that route as well.
You always get it. I'm doing fine.
It's not some sort of, you know, mystery novel here where we're trying to figure out how Mom's doing. No. You could ask Mom, how are you doing? That works too.
Right. The other thing you can look at is the car.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
Marks on the car. Mysterious.
Oh, boy. I can tell you some stories on that one. Yeah.
Well, we have 35 minutes here.
You see a dent on all four corners of the car. That's a red flag.
That is a red flag.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
If you see some other colored paint on your parents' car, you may need to have a conversation.
That's indeed a clue, yeah.
I've
been there.
Yeah. I think
it's always somebody hit
been
me.
There.
No, you hit them.
But
there wasn't enough room in this parking space. I heard that one, too.
The hydrant came out of nowhere.
It's like, oh, my goodness. Oh, boy. May I have the keys, please?
Wow.
You got to watch out for that stuff. You're right.
Get into a couple more of these, and then maybe we'll get back to that keys conversation.
It's important.
It's not as easy.
No, it's not easy at all.
It's not as easy as we'll take those keys.
That's hard.
I like, you look at the bills. Bunch of past due bills, bunch of red stamps all over the envelopes. Maybe, you know, their financial affairs need to be watched a little closer. If there's a copy of a check for a large amount of money to a place that you've never heard of, you know, if there's an African prince who needs a little bit of your mom's money, if there's some sort of, IRS fake letter type thing we've
or
seen
if
that
a
before.
Year supply of light bulbs happens to come into the house for no reason.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being prepared, John.
That's happened too. Well, you know.
Right. I've heard that a lot of clients say it's that bills aren't being paid on time, you know, something's like the phone or the electric is going to be shut off, you know, some horror stories there.
And none of this is, hey, pack your bags, Mom, you can't live at home anymore. This may be, hey, didn't you do that power of attorney 15 years ago with Jane Marie? Maybe we should look at that again. And you know, maybe we use it to add my name to your account, Mom, so I could help you with some of the bills. You have so much to worry about. Let me take care of the bills.
And for me, that worked out very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good solution.
So, you know, Jamie, maybe you could explain in the next couple minutes here before the break. So powers of attorney allow you to sign for somebody else. But if you're on the account, you don't need to use the power of attorney. It's a lot easier to handle affairs.
That's right, because if you're on the account, then you can write checks and pay bills and go online and see the balance. It's a little bit easier than a power of attorney because you don't have to have the bank, you know, review and approve the power of attorney.
Right.
So definitely if you want to help your parents pay their bills, just get on their checking account.
Yeah, and you have access to the statements more easily, and you could kind of see what's going on. You don't have to wait for a big holiday and go through their mail.
Yeah, and the bank usually knows what you're up to.
Yeah.
When you start doing that, and they're pretty good about it.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if everyone's got, like, a local bank and relationship anymore, but I can tell you from even banks that have helped our law firm, if there's a check that seems a little, like, that's not the normal check that Herzog would have sent, let me just verify. We get those phone calls to verify checks, and hopefully local bankers are doing that for their elder customers as well. The last and easy thing is when, you know, you're with your family and you're talking about, hey, remember, you know, Uncle Fred and no, I don't really remember. What, just memory starts to go. And it doesn't mean there's dementia. It doesn't mean anything in particular, but these are little signs. And even as you get older, there's something called age-related memory loss. And one day it might be forgetting to turn the stove off. These are the things we're trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. I forgot that I took my medicine 5 times already today. I forgot where I live when I go for a walk, my normal walk. And it's not a light switch, it's a dimmer. So we want to notice those things. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. On that note.
Oh, dear.
Well, it's good to, you know.
It's important. It really is.
The same way, guys, that you may not see, Jamer, you have not seen my son in months, right?
Right.
And come Christmas party time, you're going to see him, and you're going to say, what, I can't believe how big he got. And I'm going to say, I didn't really see it, because I saw him every day.
Yeah. Right.
And you may have a sibling who's always around mom, and then you are in town, and you're like, geez, mom really slowed down. And it's that perspective that's very, very important.
It helps you to see something that you don't really recognize yourself, necessarily.
Well, Jamrie, I think that gets us to the break, so we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And my name is Jane Marie Schaefer.
In the first half hour of our call, it's a call-in program, Jane Marie, 518-476-5900. We were talking about a bunch of different things, right? Some myths, especially when it comes to use and enjoyment of that property you may put in your trust. And then in that last piece, we were talking about some signs to look out for when you're with family. It's been a while since you've seen your mom and dad and up close and personal, and maybe you're noticing some stuff. It doesn't mean anything, or maybe it does. And we just want you to kind of look out for those, especially for family of our clients, because we know our clients, Jamrie, did a power of attorney. We know our clients did a healthcare proxy. We know we're prepared for those kinds of things, so it's not as difficult as we got to convince mom she's got to go talk to some attorney and, you know, hand the keys over to us, figuratively speaking.
Right.
The power of attorney is not that. However, over the next 15 minutes, John's going to tell us all the different ways to take keys from people.
You'll have to figure it out on your own. It's difficult. It really is. you know, I don't want to tell too many personal stories on the air, but yeah, my mother, we took her keys away, and one day I came to check on her, and she said, I drove the car today.
Well, she hotwired it herself.
No, my father had hidden a set of keys. My father was long gone.
Yeah.
He had hidden a set of keys somewhere. She knew where they were. She found them and started driving around. So I had to take those away.
And then she found the third set of keys.
Oh, my goodness. No, that was it. No. Then we got rid of the car. But
John, this is an issue
everybody has to, you know, sooner or later you're going to have to deal with it. And it's important because it affects not only the health of the individual you're trying to take care of, but, you know, if someone's out on the street with dementia driving a car, I mean, you could seriously hurt someone or a child.
Absolutely.
And you don't want that to happen.
Absolutely. And Jamie, we have lots of clients and clients' kids in particular that say, what am I supposed to do here? He still wants to drive. And I have a bunch of suggestions. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it, Jamie, and we'll tag team this here.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, I mean, it's, of course, really hard as a practical matter to get the keys away, but to kind of get a third party to give you an opinion, Sunnyview has a program or a test that you can do for seniors driving. If you can get your parents to agree to that, it's kind of a test to see if they're able to keep driving.
Interesting.
So that's something good to do. Of course, it's still getting them to agree to go there and do it, but then it's not you telling them. It's a third party, you know, who reviews the test and sits in the car with you on the test.
Darn good idea, yeah.
I'm picturing, you know, trying to get a dog to go to the vet by saying, we're going to the park.
That's right.
Something like that. But that's great. You know, we have these powers of attorney, and there is a line that you can't pass when you're agent, right? The job of a power of attorney, it's on the first page of the power of attorney. It says, is to follow the instructions of the principal, of dad, right? And then it's, well, if he can't give you instructions, if his brain's starting to be mush, well, then you can do what's in his best interest. And there's, okay, well, he told me he wants to drive. I don't think he should be. And it's not as clean as, well, his best interests are what you decide. We tell our clients when you do a power of attorney, Jamie, you still have all the powers in the world. You're just also giving people power. And we do the power of attorney because we want to try to avoid a guardianship proceeding where we're getting into the nitty-gritty and taking powers away from dad, which we don't want to do. We don't want to rub anyone's face in any of it. So you do the power of attorney to be proactive. But when the principal, you know, is no longer rational in terms of their ability to drive, that's really difficult. We had clients in Kingston, Jamie, where we said take away the keys, and he did something different than what you're saying, John. He just called the dealership every time and said, I need another set of keys.
Oh, no.
And if you're the dealership,
of course they can, yeah.
So what do we do?
They look up the VIN number and bing, 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 there you go.
What my mother did, so my grandfather was an absolute, you know, he could repair anything. He could create an engine and then break it down and then create it again type of guy. And I think she removed some important thing from underneath the car so it just wouldn't start. I'm not a car guy, so I can't tell you what thing it was. But that car stood in the garage for the last 5-6 years of his life, never moved, and he could never get the darn thing to start. So that was the way we went about it, Jamie.
Right, that works. But I mean, it's interesting how someone may not be able to drive, but they know enough to call the car dealer to try and get keys, right?
Well, there's a difference between I want to drive, and now what am I doing as I merge onto the, you know, I-87 or something like that. You know, that's a different story, and the ramifications of, you know, you could clean up nice, you could have a good conversation. If you're disoriented with 2,000 pounds of metal around you, that's a big, big, big deal.
Right.
Are there any other things you've recommended? I mean, I know the nuclear option, unfortunately, is the G word, which we do the power of attorney to avoid a guardianship, but sometimes it's just needed.
I don't know if you can read that.
Yeah. Oh, do we have Joanne on the phone?
Yeah.
Hey, Joanne. Joanne in Voorheesville. Hi, Joanne.
I have. a comment and a question.
Sure.
Talking about the Sunnyview driver review process.
Mm-hmm.
It is quite thorough. We took my sister through that, and the result was she could not drive, so it took the onus off everybody else. And she can't argue with a professional, okay? So I do thoroughly recommend it. It's a physical test. It's an actual driving test. They take her out on the road. So it's very comprehensive. What you need is a script from her doctor. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And again, that also makes the bad guy her doctor. Okay? So it kind of gets you out of the loop there.
Joanne, we've been the bad guy before as well. We've had some of those conversations with the moms and dads of the world.
Yeah, it has been. But having the doctor say, I think it's time you get a driver review, just really was helpful.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, the question I had was on power of attorney. I'm the primary power of attorney, and my one sister is like the backup. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And everything has been signed and notarized. Okay? Mm-hmm. The question was, is this like sequential? Or can we, my sister and I, divide and conquer, which is what my hope was.
So, can I ask you a quick question here?
Yeah.
So on the power of attorney, there's these different sections, and section B of the power of attorney names the primary agent. Does that only have your name on it?
I don't know, and I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. Because then section C names a successor agent. And the answer to your question depends on if both your names are in B, and there's just your names there, or it says or in between your name.
Okay.
Or if you're in B and your sister's in C, well, then you can't divide and conquer just because. Now, if you're a backup, you can act when the primary agent is unwilling or unable or unavailable. And theoretically, you can be unavailable on Tuesday and available on Wednesday, I guess. But if you guys are thinking we want a tag team handling mom's affairs, as an example, then I would, if she can, I would redo the power of attorney. If you guys are not both in section B there for primary.
Okay.
On the power of attorney, after these, you name your agents, whether it's the primary or successor, there's a little line that allows you to initial to say my agents may act separately.
Yeah.
So we would want her to initial that so everyone knows you guys could act separately. But you have to first be acting together for her to be able to say you're acting separately. So you both still need to be in that section B. Right?
Okay.
There's nothing to initial to say you can act together if you're in B and she's in C, if that makes sense.
Okay. So if we're not both on section B, then power of attorney, I would have to say I don't want to do anything anymore, and then the second one would take over.
Kind of. So, if you go to a bank and you're your sister, you're the backup to Joanne, okay?
Yeah.
And she walks in with an original power of attorney. There are lots of places that have no problem letting her transact, and then there's some places that will want some sort of thing signed by you saying or some proof that you're unavailable or deceased or something. It kind of depends on where you go.
Okay.
Jamarie, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know clients where they say, oh, yeah, and I was out of town, so my brother handled this and this and this. And I look at the power of attorney and their backups, and I know that they didn't provide something signed by their sister who was the primary.
Yeah.
Right. I hate to say it depends on the bank, right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to take that chance, right? Because if they are really
The long-term solution,
sure.
Right, is to have a document that spells it out really clearly. But you could, you might be able to get by the way it is right now.
Okay. Probably not worth the effort. Okay. we talked long enough. I found my power of attorney. So on Section B, it does just list me.
Okay. Yeah. So you're the primary agent, and if the long term plan is your sister's going to help you a lot, then I think you need to change the power of attorney so that you're on even footing.
Yeah, because Section C lists the other sister. Okay.
Yeah.
And it is not checked where it says may act separately. Okay.
Well, and remember, because you're in separate sections, it wouldn't even have mattered if that was initialed.
Okay. So the best way to do this is to do it again. Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I will set up an appointment sometimes. You folks are my sister's attorney. So
very good. Nice talking to you, Joanne. Take care.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That document, that power of attorney, Jamie, we can say it every single show. I don't care. We should say it five times every show. It is such an important document to be able to allow not just the stuff that sounds like Joanne's doing, which is paying bills, right, for the principal. It could be those powers in there, if it's got the right language in it, which ours does. You could create trusts with it. You can apply for Medicaid for someone with it. You could create a pooled income trust for their income so that they have enough money to reside at home with that power of attorney. You could sell property. You could sign a lease for the cottage in the back of the property.
Right.
If in your fact pattern, Jamie, with the client who didn't know they could rent out that cottage, if mom in that fact pattern is so incapacitated that she has no idea who anyone is, if she just has a good power of attorney done by you, I know that she can lease the property through her agent. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can't really do all this long-term care planning and aging in place planning, right, without a power of attorney.
It's the most important document. It's the key to everything else. I say to people, if during the document signing, I always do the power, so I do the healthcare proxy first, and I do the power of attorney second every single time. And in my twisted brain, I'm like, okay, if someone doesn't feel good for the second half of the signing, and they need to go home, their agent, if they're in the room, can continue the rest of, you can do everything except for the will. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So that needs to get signed early on.
Yeah.
Which is why sometimes go to hospitals or nursing homes or assisted livings, right, for the power of attorney.
Right.
Just so the child can do, excuse me, the rest of the planning.
You're getting emotional, Jamie. I can hear it in your voice.
I'm getting emotional. It's so important.
So we have about 15 minutes here, Jamie. It's been a while since I've had an opportunity to remind people about why we do the Medicaid trust, and I thought I could take a minute or two with your help. And whenever I meet with someone and we're now doing the signing of the trust, I always ask them, why are we doing this trust? Why this specific piece of paper here, this pile of paper, why are we doing this? Why aren't we not doing something else? And I make them answer it, and we struggle through it. And the four reasons out there, guys, to do a trust, it's really basic. Number one, you want to leave money to the right people. Your trust, Jamie, every trust you do says what happens when somebody dies.
And, right, absolutely. Yep.
And not only that, but it says, in most cases, because it's a Jane Marie trust, it says, I give everything to my kids or my issue or whatever, but if so-and-so predeceases me, then I give it to so-and-so. Right. You have bad news layered all over the place.
Right. We make you think of awful contingencies. But
awful.
That's part of
awful contingencies. Everything everything from your child predeceased you to your child is in a skilled nursing facility, because we don't want their nursing home to get their inheritance.
That's true.
Right. And we also, on the flip side, don't want, Jamie, people to come in every 3 weeks because things are happening in their life and they need to change their documents. We can look into the future a little bit. We're not predicting anything. We're just being, proactive. So you have in your trust, you have language if someone's in a nursing home. You have language if one of the beneficiaries is under a certain age. So for my clients, normally it's grandkids under the age of 30, and we put a whole bunch of rules in there. What do you usually do? Is there a certain number you go with?
Yeah, it's usually 30. I mean, sometimes clients choose older or younger, but that's a good starting point.
And the age you have for your kids is 50, correct?
Yeah.
And what do you do? I do a little bit at 22, a little more at 25, balance at 30. With all the rules to give money earlier, you know, pay for school, stuff like that, and then you could hold money longer if someone's a knucklehead. I know Harry does 25 and 30 for his ages most of the time. What do you do?
I do 25 and 30 because under 25, the trustee can still pay for college. So it's not like they can't get the money.
I like a little bit at 22 because it's a test. They don't know it's a test, but it's a test.
Right.
And I want to see how they're going to spend some of their money. And I'd go to flip side, which is we could always hold money longer if need be. But it's, you know, if you're 25, that's not, you know, 24 is not a big difference from 25. You might be, you might not have had a lot of money before. And now you're 25 and you're still, to me, 25 is a kid. Jamarie, if one of our attorneys, we hired a new attorney and they were 25 years old. You would be disgusted looking at them. You'd be like, this is such a baby, right?
Yeah.
So are we going to give them $500,000 just without any test? So I like a little bit of a test, personally.
I don't give my kids that much money. Nope.
So it's an estate plan. And everything we're just talking about isn't special for the trust. You could have that in your will. You should have it in your will, right? When Jamarie does a will... I'm talking like you're not in the room. Jamarie, when you do a will, you have all the same stuff, all the same provisions about nursing homes and this and that, right?
Yes, because the will is, even though, I can talk a little bit about a pour-over will, right? So,
what I mean, Jamarie, sorry to cut you off, is even if someone's just doing a basic will with you.
A basic will, got it. Yes,
all the language is the same.
All the language is the same. We have the ages for grandchildren, and we have the nursing home clause. We have the simultaneous death provision in there.
Oh, that's a lovely one.
That's a good one to explain, right?
Believe it or not, if we go in a common disaster, right, we got to say someone went first. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, everything I have goes to my wife. Everything she's got goes to me, and around we go.
And there's double probates, which you don't need to have.
Oh, no.
Double probates. Dueling probates. You've heard of dueling pianos, right? This is the worst version of it. It's dueling probates. There's another provision in there, actually. I wasn't even thinking of bringing it up, Jamarie, but you just jogged my memory. There's a provision, John, that says if somebody dies 90 days after me, within 90 days after me, they are deemed to have predeceased me.
What?
Yeah. You survive me by 3 weeks.
Yeah.
If it turns out that's what happened, I'm saying, no, I don't want it to go to you anymore. And I have a good plan. I have a plan that says that if John predeceases me, I give it to Jamarie. That's my plan, right? So you're telling me just because John survived me by 3 weeks, that there goes my plan? Because if you survive me, John, then it's your money, and your money passes under your will. And you don't like Jamarie.
And these are the decisions you have to make.
Well, you left nothing to Jamarie in your plan. Yeah. So what's the difference between... besides that, it's a colossal paperwork nightmare because I can't finish your estate until I finish my estate. Because you're inheriting money from my estate.
True. Yeah.
And around we go. So everyone always asks, why 90 days? And the answer is very easy. 89 was too little and 91's too much.
Well, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, perfect sense.
Yeah.
So your trust has an estate plan, obviously. Okay. And this segues into something you mentioned, Jamarie, which is a pour over will, because people always say, as we're doing a trust, well, what about my will? And we say, well, we're going to do a new will. We're going to get rid of your old one, but the will isn't the big thing anymore. I'm looking right past John's head is a cassette tape holder. It's like, what about the cassette tapes? We don't care about the cassette tapes anymore. We don't even care about the CD player. We're on, digital music now. So when you're doing a trust, it's like, well, what about these VHS tapes I still have? No. We don't need that old will anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, we now have a new will, and it's the type of will that does one job. It's basically if, for some reason, God forbid, you have to probate this thing, even though we were mm-hmm. trying to avoid probate, if we do, don't worry, everything mm-hmm. still goes to the trust, so it could be divided based on that plan, that estate plan that Jamie created for you.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
basic estate planning is why you do a trust. Number two mm-hmm. is to avoid probate. What is probate, Jamie?
So this is, if you have a will, you still need to go to probate. So probate is the process of proving the will, which means you have to file the will with a court with a probate petition.
Yep.
Give notice to certain people who can object to the will if they choose. And the court makes sure it's a valid will before they appoint or confirm your appointment, I guess, of the executor.
Your will is of no force or effect until the court says it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, probate is the proving of the will. If you have a will and that's it, we still have the plan, right? I could still leave things to John, and if he's in a nursing mm-hmm. home, skip him. And I still have that plan, but to get to that plan being the effective plan, the will has to go through probate, filing mm-hmm. fees, attorney's fees, a long mm-hmm. wait.
Right.
We don't want you to go through it.
Because if you do a will yourself, and this has happened, you may get some of it wrong, right? A lot of people who do wills on their own don't get the affidavit of attesting witnesses.
Yeah.
And when it goes to the court, that's their chance to look and say, oh, no, you need to do this, or this wasn't done right.
To use a basketball analogy, it's not a slam dunk probate. It's not a layup. It's like a free throw. It should go in. It should be fine. But occasionally it's not fine. And we'd like to avoid that situation altogether because specifically when we do a trust, if we have to probate a will where one of the reasons we did the trust was to avoid probating the will, well, then we messed up or the client messed up or some asset was forgotten about. But we still do the will just in case, just to make sure the plan, the who gets what is still okay. So we're creating a plan, we're avoiding probate, and here's the big one. Second to last. So this is big. The next one's even bigger. We want to mm-hmm. protect the money, Jamie. We want to protect that house. We want to protect that cottage in the back of the lot. We want to make mm-hmm. sure that the pie that you leave to charity or to your friends or family, to your kids, your grandkids, whatever you're doing, whatever that plan was, we want the mm-hmm. pie that gets divided up to be as big as possible. We want mm-hmm. all the money you worked hard for to be protected, because the big threat out there is not going to be your family fighting, although that happens. It's not going to be something like that, although it happens. It's mm-hmm. going to be your life getting unbelievably expensive when you are only getting Social Security and a small pension. And now mm-hmm. your nursing home costs $16,000 a month. So it's about that, right? And it's, I say this all the time, it's unlikely that you need a nursing home, but it's so expensive that you have to prepare for it. It's unlikely that you're going to get into a car accident today. You have insurance because if you do, it's so expensive. It's unlikely mm-hmm. you need your appendix removed tomorrow. But if it mm-hmm. happens, you cannot private pay the hospital. Right?
So right. It's all about insurance, right?
It is absolutely a form of insurance. And there's mm-hmm. other ways to avoid probate. There's other ways mm-hmm. to try to protect your money. The key mm-hmm. is that the trust is the only way we can do the plan, avoid probate, protect our money, while, mm-hmm. number four, you are the boss. You control the whole mm-hmm. thing. You are like the principal on the power of attorney. Everyone works for you. They work at the pleasure of you. You know, Jeremy, they said, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes mm-hmm. presidents are firing, you know, their cabinet or this or that and asking for resignations. Mm-hmm. You work at the pleasure of the president. If you are involved in a trust, you are involved at the pleasure of the settlor of the trust, mom, dad. So if you want to keep control of everything while we, you know, head on a swivel, we're looking at a plan, we're looking at avoiding probate, we're looking at protecting our money, all very important. None of it is as important as you controlling everything. So we make sure you control everything, and guess what, John? If you're not doing so hot, if you're capacity is diminished. Well, mm-hmm. thank God Jamie did that power of attorney for you.
Yeah.
Because now the agent, now Joanne, Joanne's sister.
Yeah, yeah.
They can amend the trust if needed on behalf of mom as agent. They can remove money. They can enter into a lease on that cottage at the back of the lot. So it all kind of comes together, and it's amazing because in my mind, and Jamie, I'm sure in your mind, it's a very simple thing. It's connect the we're just connecting four dots. But for everyone else, it's, well, but you said it's irrevocable. And that's where we get to explain what irrevocable means, which is for another day, I suppose.
That's right. That's a big explanation. But you do keep a lot of powers in an irrevocable trust, which is, well, part of it is we custom draft that into the trust. So it really works out where you do have control and you protect the assets.
It's incredibly important. You know, if I was going to kind of prioritize that, it's always control number one. That's the most important thing because a lot of our clients, because this 5-year look back period, Jamie, we need them to start thinking about this in their 60s and their 70s. And I don't care what anyone says about those ages. You are young. There's decades, decades in front of you, God willing. And it's amazing how life has changed in that regard because, you know, 52 ain't 52 anymore, and 62 ain't 62 anymore. I have more and more clients whose ages start with a 7 who are working because they want to and they can. It's a different world.
Yeah, I did a trust for someone yesterday who's 79, and that's not that unusual.
So. You did a trust for yourself, Jane Marie. That's amazing. That was unneeded, Jane Marie. That's for all the bald jokes you've given me before.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, Dave, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Listen, I tell me all the money you guys spend on haircuts, and I'll tell you how much I've saved. On that note.
A lot.
Have a very happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thanksgiving, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.